So now thinking about the situation, what's your reaction to what happened to him at the end of the game?
Yeah, obviously super disappointing. And it's one thing to lose a game. It's another to potentially lose your quarterback. And as you see Jordan go down, and the first thing you're thinking of is, oh no, could that be a season-ending injury? And you're just trying to avoid that at all costs. And obviously we saw that with Aaron last year in New York. And it's just the worst thing for any team is to potentially have a season where you're expected to compete. And then all of a sudden, game one, quarterback is down and your season full of hope and expectations is over. So you're just hopefully trying to avoid the worst. And you see him kind of walk off a little bit with a trainer, and you never quite know if it's going to be one of those ACLs or if you might get lucky like Patrick Mahomes did a couple years ago, where it ended up being a 1 to 2 week injury. And Matt LaFleur this week did not even rule out the potential of him playing, although I think that's probably a little bit of subterfuge at this point. But yeah, that's exactly what's going through your mind, and you're just trying to avoid the worst case scenario. And that literally added injury to insult in that game in a performance where they had every opportunity to go and win that game, and unfortunately due to their own mistakes, they could not get the job done.
Well, I definitely want to talk about the game, but I'm glad you brought up Matt LaFleur's move. The Packers don't put Love on IR, but you think that's more gamesmanship than reality?
I think him saying that there's the potential to play this week, or at least not ruling it out, is maybe a little bit more gamesmanship. I didn't expect him to go on IR simply because it sounds like they're hopeful that this is maybe more in the 2 to 3 to 4 week range than anything in the 4 to 6. And obviously putting him on IR would eliminate any chance of him playing in the first 4 weeks. And if there's any 0.01% chance that he can play in the next 4 weeks, I think they would have kept him on the active roster. And that seems like what is the case right now. But yeah, I do think as far as him playing this week, they certainly know better than I do. But it would certainly be a little bit surprising if he played this week. But listen, if there's a chance, you certainly give him the week. And that's what Green Bay has always said in the past, that they're going to give him the opportunity for the entire week to play out before they make that decision. And that's what they're going to do here. And now we just have to kind of wait and see. But no, I think it's probably more likely that Malik Willis is the starter this week.
Annie Herman is with us. He's got the wildly popular Pack-A-Day podcast. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Well, what do we know about Malik Willis, who hasn't been a Packer very long?
Yeah, we know that he's extremely athletic. He has a live arm. He can hit any layer of the field. And we know that he's a brand new Green Bay Packer just a couple weeks ago. So the odds that he knows the entire playbook at this point are extremely thin. You know, going back to when Green Bay brought in a rookie this past offseason at the quarterback position, Matt LaFleur was asked after a couple weeks of, where he was in the playbook. And he said he's like, drinking water through a fire hose at that point. And that was obviously Michael Pratt, their 7th round pick. It is very difficult to pick up this offense in a very short period of time. So you have to think that they're going to narrow it down. And I asked Matt about that, of what percentage of the playbook he would probably know. And he said he didn't want to put a percentage on it, but that he knew that he would know 100% of the game plan. So they're going to put a game plan in place specifically for Malik Willis and, cater it to what he does best. I would expect there to be maybe a little bit more read option. Matt does have that in his bag of tricks and in his playbook. And he doesn't obviously do it a ton with Aaron or with Jordan, but I do think he's going to add a lot of that in there. There's a lot of stuff that will be potential, obviously run pass option from a run or a little bubble screen to the side that he's ran a bunch in the past, a lot of 2 running back sets. And now you've got this option of maybe using your quarterback a little bit more as a running threat. So I think we're going to see a little bit of that. Wouldn't surprise me to see some deep shots down the field with Malik Willis's arm talent, but it's going to be a very pared down playbook and a very specific playbook for Malik Willis this week if he does end up the starter.
Andy, how did the Packers get in this position where Malik Willis is their only option for Jordan Love? What happened with the QB depth chart?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, they drafted Michael Pratt in the 7th round. Sean Clifford was a 5th round pick a season ago. And those were the two quarterbacks that were really battling it out all offseason, and it just didn't work out. The Michael Pratt one is a little bit more interesting because you saw some of the upside and the talent there. Green Bay, known for developing quarterbacks and known for giving their draft picks a very long leash, basically said goodbye to him at the end of camp. Didn't even bring him back on the practice squad. He's in Tampa right now as a practice squad quarterback, so that was a little bit interesting. As far as Sean Clifford goes, he was their backup a season ago. Looked like he could be sort of one of those game manager quarterbacks who could come in and run the offense if you absolutely needed him to. But he came in this offseason ever since really minicamp. He had a minicamp practice where he threw 3 interceptions to Zane Anderson. has thrown interceptions all throughout training camp and in preseason. Just didn't really look like he was not only just taking a step, but he looked like he was significantly taking a step backwards. Green Bay was clearly not pleased with how that went. And instead of going with a rookie that they didn't trust or a second-year guy that took a major step backwards and was turning the ball over all over the place, they decided to go with a quarterback like Malik Willis, who has definitely more upside, has started some games in the league, albeit not with great results, and decided that that was a better play for them. And it's hard to argue at this point that even with the talent that Malik Willis has, even if it's not come to fruition yet, that that's probably still the better play over both Michael Pratt and Sean Clifford at this point.
Andy, looking at the game in Brazil, it was a high-scoring affair. There were a lot of yards. There were a bunch of turnovers. There were a lot of rushing touchdowns for Saquon Barkley. So what did you take away?
Yeah, we knew going into that game, week one can be a little bit of a chaos project, and you never quite know what you're going to get in week one. Add on top of that, a game in Brazil internationally, first time anyone's ever played in Brazil. You've obviously got the long flight, and then add on top of that, a field that was extremely slippery for both sides, and you saw people slipping all over the place. There were some pretty big plays in that game for Green Bay, both on offense and defense, that I think if the field conditions were better, I think they connect on easily. And I think Philly obviously had the same thing, and it's not to make an excuse. Philly had the same international travel. They had the same field conditions. They had the same everything, and they got the job done, and Green Bay didn't. But I went through, and I counted countless mistakes for Green Bay in that game. In fact, I counted up 39 of them, and there were a few more that I could – yeah, there are a few more I could have added, and was just maybe being generous by the point it got to number 39 on the list. just a lot of missed tackles, a lot of missed throws, drop passes – a ton of penalties, just uncharacteristic things that you just don't see from this Green Bay team. Even the young team that they had last year, and I know they're youngest in the league again this year, that we didn't really see them have the multitude of mistakes that they had this week against Philadelphia. And I think they're really going to be, you know, sort of ruining the opportunity of coming away with a win in that game, especially now that you're going to have games probably without Jordan Love, and some of those losses could potentially stack up as they try to fight for a playoff spot down the line. Not picking up that win in a very winnable game against Philly is definitely going to be a level of disappointing.
What did you hear from players and or coaches about the trip to Brazil after everything that was said beforehand?
Sounds like everything went out without a hitch, and it didn't seem like they had any real problems or issues other than with the field. It sounds like the travel was good. It sounds like there was no security concerns. Everyone was super friendly. So everything was a very positive takeaway, other than the fact, again, that you had a very slippery field. And I will say it seemed like in the second half, when maybe they did some cleat adjustments, it was a little bit better, and you didn't see it as much in the second half, but you still definitely saw enough of it. I don't know what the situation was there. It sounds like they specifically had a turf that was approved by both the Eagles and the Packers that they brought in, and it was a very similar field to what both the Eagles and the Packers used. So not exactly sure what the situation was. I know Kenny Clark had some comments again that the field was in horrible condition. So it's just unfortunate that that happens. But outside of that, it sounds like everything went perfect.
It was really weird this past weekend to see Aaron Jones score a touchdown for the Vikings. I'm still trying to wrap my mind around that. What do you think the potential is for the new running backs group?
Yeah, I think you saw a lot of potential. And I thought Emmanuel Wilson really flashed this past week. He had four carries for over 40 yards, had another couple of receptions on the day, or at least a couple targets, I should say. And I thought that was a really promising start from him. And then you kind of go to Josh Jacobs, where in the beginning of the game, it looked like he really couldn't get anything going. I think that was a lot more of the offensive line. And then you started seeing in the second half, as he started getting a few more carries, gaining some momentum, the line was blocking a little bit better, and you really saw him be a little bit more of a dynamic piece in this offense. I don't know that either, you know, any running back on this roster, Marshawn Lloyd included, their third-round pick, is going to be able to fully, you know, take the place of Aaron Jones if he were to be healthy through the entirety of the season. Green Bay's betting that, you know, based on recent results and Aaron Jones having three injuries a season ago, that Jones just might be at the point where, yeah, when he's in the game, nobody's doubting what he is capable of, but can you get him for a full 17-game season? Can he be fully healthy when you get to the playoffs? And Green Bay clearly thought that at this point that was not going to be the case. They wanted to go with a little bit of a younger running back who had maybe a little bit more of a bigger build that could hold up to the wear and tear, and then, again, bring in third-round pick Marshawn Lloyd as well. We'll see how that develops. I think they have enough running backs in this room to be very successful even without Aaron Jones, but it is very difficult to see him in purple and yellow, and he obviously had a great first week for Minnesota.
Andy Herman is with us from Green Bay, the Pack-A-Day podcast, looking back on week number one, but also talking about Jordan Love, Malik Willis moving forward. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. What about tight end, or what other questions do you have about this Packers offense starting 24?
Yeah, from an offensive standpoint, the interesting thing is this looked very much like a Packers offense. I think the disappointing aspect was leaving points on the board. They were not as good in the red zone as they should have been. That's something that they're usually pretty good at. I thought they got a little bit predictable. Even on the two-point play, it was basically just a halfback dive. That's very uncharacteristic for a Matt LaFleur offense. They usually have a couple wrinkles that they'll throw at you that they know are going to be successful, and Green Bay just couldn't find it in the red zone. But outside of that, they found a way to run the ball. They had open receivers down the field. Jaden Reed was absolutely fantastic. So I don't think there was a ton of question marks coming out of this one. I think who's going to be the starting right guard long term? Is it going to be Sean Ryan, or is it going to be Jordan Morgan, their first round pick, or do those two continue to rotate? And then it was really interesting. I've kind of been on the bandwagon for a while now that I thought Tucker Kraft was going to be tight end number one in this offense, but never did I really expect it to be so much of a discrepancy that I think Luke Musgrave only played 17 or 18 snaps in this game. So they got to find a way to involve him more, maybe run a little bit more of 12 personnel, get those two tight ends on the field and unlock the talent that Luke Musgrave has, because he's the sky is the limit for him as a tight end in this league, but they got to figure out a way to really unlock that potential. So those are some of the question marks I have, but I think this offense is going to be, once Jordan gets back and healthy, hopefully sooner rather than later, I think they're going to be running on all cylinders sooner rather than later.
Saquon Barkley obviously had room to run, and they were able to make space for him with the touchdowns. In terms of that run defense, what's your expectation for it?
Yeah, it's unfortunate that they had a couple of those plays that really gashed him. There's the one in particular where they had it really set up perfectly, and then three guys got out of their gaps right at the last second, and Saquon, of course, took advantage of that and had a 30, 40-yard run down the field, and probably could have gone for more if Javon Buller didn't make a good play at the end to make the tackle. So I think that was the really big one that was really disappointing. You have the touchdown run as well, where there was a misalignment, and then Kenny Clark kind of got blocked out of the gap entirely. Quay Walker came down and missed on the running back. So there were a couple plays in this one that make you disappointed in the end result. But I think if you look at, you know, the remainder of the game, Green Bay probably held up better against Saquon and in the run game in general than they have in the past. So I think there's signs there, but as we know, it sometimes just is just that one big run that kind of takes the running game to an entirely different level and really increases your average on the day and your efficiency on the day. So they just got to make sure that it's a bit more consistent. I think there's some promising signs there, and we know that Jeff Hafley is going to want to keep that extra safety in the box as much as possible. So it's going to be paramount that they do well against the run, because otherwise they're not going to get in some of those third and long situations that we know they want to be in.
And even considering in the NFC North, where I think the division may be better overall than what some people expected, especially if the Vikings can keep up any type of a winning percentage. So, yeah, being able to run the ball and stop the run, that's no different than what you generally get in the NFC North, right?
No, very much so, especially as the weather gets colder and you're outside in Chicago or outside at Lambeau. That definitely becomes a very important aspect. But I'm with you. I think this division is going to be really good. Outside of Green Bay, all three of the other teams won, albeit with a little help from Tennessee and a lot of turnovers at the end of that game. But outside of that, yeah, this division is going to be really tough. Minnesota looks really good, albeit against the Giants. But I still think this is going to be a dogfight for this division, with Detroit being one of the best teams in the league.
Overall, anything stand out to you about the changes and the games that were played in week one?
Yeah, a couple things. I thought, first of all, Carolina, I know we expected to be bad, but my goodness, they looked like a JV team playing against a pro team. It just looked a complete level different, and losing Derek Brown this week, and then for a team that already was massively struggling, a brutal start for Bryce Young. It's not like they were going up against one of the Chiefs or the Ravens or something like that. Like, the Saints are fine, but that was an absolute blowout performance by the Saints, and kudos to them for getting the job done, but they looked terrible. I thought Pittsburgh got the most ultimate Pittsburgh Steelers win. Like, credit Mike Tomlin. That guy just figures out ways to win almost no matter what. That guy has a winning record or a 500 record almost every single year, and you're thinking Atlanta's going to come out, new quarterback, new excitement with that team, and Pittsburgh just is like, no, we're going to win with 6 field goals and Justin Fields at quarterback, and it just doesn't even matter. So that was super impressive, and then we saw some interesting quarterback play. The rookies really struggled, which is not super unexpected, but I think overall that there's some exciting teams, and I'm really interested to see how this Packers team with Malik Willis can weather the storm and hopefully get back in that playoff picture towards the end of the year.
Okay, I have to ask you this as a Flyer, Andy, and if I'm catching you off guard, totally understandable. I just saw that the documentary, if we can call it that, on Aaron Rodgers is going to drop around Christmas time, and it's called Enigma. What are you expecting?
Man, that's a great question, and I would expect anything and everything at this point. I don't think there's anything I would be surprised by at this point, and Enigma is such a perfect word for it because, you know, covering Aaron Rodgers for so many years, there are so many really awesome things that he does. No matter what, you know, side of everything you come down on, there's some really awesome things that he did. There's an article this week about all the work that he's done in Chico, California, and the philanthropy and everything like that. I've seen him do stuff for kids with childhood cancer that's just unbelievably amazing. I'm hoping that we kind of get both sides of the story, some of the really good stuff, some of the really interesting stuff, some of the maybe not so great stuff. That's kind of what makes Aaron Aaron, and he's so great for the league, and the fact that as an NFL, you kind of need guys like that where everyone's either tuning in to cheer for him or cheer against him, and there's usually not any in between, and those polarizing figures are sometimes really good for the league, and I know a lot of people were tuning in last night to see how he was going to do, and again, either cheer for him or against him, and regardless of where you come down on it, it's good for the game.
How much is he missed in Green Bay, Andy?
That's a really interesting question. I haven't even really thought of that. I think just like when Brett Favre left, there was going to be Brett Favre people no matter what. And a lot of people wearing Vikings jerseys because they supported Brett, even in Green Bay at the time. And I think there's still a lot of those people that support Aaron in the same way. I think the divorce went about as clean as you could possibly hope it to go. There wasn't any, you know, major jabs back and forth. It was mostly professional, which I think led to a lot of people, again, still having a very positive view of Aaron. But I think everyone's very excited about Jordan, what he did last year. I think people recognize that the situation with Aaron, with age and contract and everything, it was probably time to move on and see what Jordan could do. And then when Jordan followed that up with a really impressive season last year, I think everyone sort of understood it. So I don't think there's any really burned bridges. I think Aaron will go in the Packers Hall of Fame. His number will be retired and all those things. But I'm sure there's people that miss him. I'm sure there's people that were, again, ready to move on. But that's what kind of makes Aaron Aaron. And like I said, kind of that enigma, as the show is appropriately called.
And as you point out, it helps that Jordan Love and the Packers really took off in the second half. And so there's maybe a little less of that looking back to what the Packers had. Yeah, that's a great point. At Andy Herman NFL, he's a writer for the Packer Report. He's a podcast host, and he's the owner of the Pack-A-Day podcast, which I know is really popular for Packers fans. Andy, it's great to catch up with you for the first time this season. Thanks so much for a couple of minutes.
Hey, can't wait to do it again. Thanks so much, Amy.